everybody. Welcome back to the Stadium Journey podcast, and thanks for joining us. Remember, check out the website, stadiumjourney.com. We are the world leader in sports travel information. We've got reviews of over 2,500 stadiums, ballparks, rinks, gyms from all over the world. I don't know what they call a cricket stadium, but, you know, we have cricket stadiums, so.
Cricket stadium.
Browns. Yes, Browns. That's the word. Thank you, Mark. Social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Threads, and probably even more. We're easy to find at Stadium Journey. Like, share, follow, right? To find episodes of the Stadium Journey podcast, you listen to this one, you love it, you want more of it, just go to HIAC Talk Radio Network, wherever you look for your favorite podcast. We'll be there too. If you would rather watch the podcast, go to Stadium Journey's YouTube page, Stadium Journey. If you want to be part of our studio audience as we're recording live, as our friend Gregory has just joined us, you can join us every other Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern across Dan's social media empire. He'll give you directions in a second. So let me take a second before we begin and introduce everybody. Dave Cotney's here. You can follow him online at ProFan9. Mark Viquez is online at Ballpark Hunter, the above average comedian. I almost stumbled over those words. Above average comedian. I've only announced like 28 games this month. So yeah, my voice is just fine. Dan Colachico's here. Follow him at DanLaw83. And I'm Paul Baker. You can follow me at PuckmanRI. All right. So again, this is the Stadium Journey podcast. So obviously, everybody here on our panel are very proud of our journeys. And we boast visit numbers that, you know, a lot of people would think are pretty impressive. For example, I've been to 211 ballparks. Dave, how about you? What's your number?
Ballparks, 89.
Mark, what's your body count for ballparks?
I think I was at 376.
All right. So, you know, those are pretty good numbers for all of us. But our guest today, he puts us all to shame. Yeah. He's got more ballparks visited than all three of us put together. Oh, yeah. In fact, he's closing in on 800 ballparks. Jeez. So Joe Robertson has come to our little podcast to discuss his travels with us. Joe, welcome, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So, all right, Joe, so for the record, what is your ballpark count at right now?
Right now, we're at 775.
And what does that include?
That includes college level, D1, D2, D3, college summer, wooden bat, all up to the major league.
Wow.
So right now, I believe I figured I've got 86 more D1 ballparks to visit, and I'll be done with the D1s.
Wow. How many are in D1? Like 301, I think it is?
Right.
Hey, look at that.
About 300, so I'm going to be going ways. I don't want to take that.
So Joe, what makes an otherwise sane man, and I say this because you and I have met on the road a few times, our paths have crossed. What makes an otherwise sane man decide, you know what? I'm going to go to every single ballpark in the whole wide world.
It's a good question. You know, I think everybody starts by having their father take them to a couple ballparks.
Not mine.
And, you know, you go to a couple more, and then you learn about people going to all the major league parks. I think that's where everybody starts. And once you get those 30 done, you don't want to quit. You go to the minors. You go to the spring training sites, and then you find out there's college summer, there's independence, there's, you know, many minor leagues. You know, I knew there were a lot of minor league teams, but I never knew how many at the time I started. There were like 159, let's say, because they share the ballpark there in Florida. And you know, once you start, it's like a jigsaw puzzle together. You want to get it put together and keep on going.
Dave's got a term for people like you and me, and actually himself and Mark, calls us completionists.
A little bit of OCD like Sheldon Cooper, right?
Yeah, I'm telling you, this year, I've only been to one new ballpark this year. I've been to multiple, but this year is going to be low on my ballpark count for the first time in 21 years, and it's freaking me out, so. Any kind of advice or support, I appreciate it, Joe.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because everybody's got a different plan. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some of them like to get their state done. I've talked to other chasers. Ronnie Niesel is a chaser out of Michigan, him and his son. And he's a big Tigers fan. So he did it a little different than I did. He wanted to see his Tigers play in every visiting ballpark. Mm-hmm. And it took, I don't know, 18 years or something to do. And he missed a game, I believe it was in Houston, between him and the Tigers. And it took him another 12 years to complete that till they, you know, till they went back or something. Or maybe it wasn't Houston, maybe it was another one. But, you know, before that was the interleague that he had to finish before they made it back there and he could get there. So
yeah. So where let's get into some of the technicalities here. So what I want to know what counts and what doesn't count. So is there a line that you draw where it's like, okay, you know I went and saw my nephew play T-ball last week. That just doesn't count.
Well, I would not count that, but there are some people that do, you know, it's just, I mean, it's a worn out phrase in the ballpark chaser, your chaser rules. And I almost kind of get tired of hearing it because people refer to it so much. So whenever somebody asks me, I just give my opinion, you know, should I count a tour? And I say, I vote no, because a tour is not seeing a game, even though you really do see the ballpark.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you there, but yeah, everybody does their chase differently. Everybody's goals are different. So, so you said you've done, or you're including all the major, all professional levels.
Correct.
And all college levels, D1, D2, D3, and all the summer Woodbat leagues.
Right. And then, you know, I even did some community college, some NAIA, because it's, yep, it's college, you know. My explanation for going to a D2 or D3 game is, okay, you have different levels of minor league, AAA, AA, AAA. And college is the same.
So do you have any that you would double up? Like, let's say that a park that would have a minor league team and a college team, would that count as two different
like ones? Like Campanelli Stadium, perhaps?
I have not done that yet, but I'm not going to rule that out. You know, I made a list, and I think there's pretty close to 30 college ballparks that share those either with a minor league team or a college summer team or an independent team. So, you know, my goal right now is one and done. You know, I'm counting ballpark, not necessarily.
Yeah, I'm with you there too.
All right, so when people find out, Joe, that you're such a prolific ballpark chaser, what's the first question that always comes to you?
Everybody wants to know what's your favorite. And it's like, you know, who's your favorite relative? Who's your favorite kid? You know, you find something unique and different about every place you go to. But I think I'm going to say now that I always say Fenway and Wrigley are my favorites. I think I'm going to narrow it down now to Fenway only because I was there three different times. The first time with my brother, who's a year older. The second time with my son. And then the second time with my daughter. And finally, that time they sang Sweet Caroline and it just gave me goosebumps. It was like tremendous.
I guess tell us a few more highlights, some of your favorites from here. Before we get to that, have you seen a ballpark in every state?
I've got Alaska and Hawaii yet to hit. That's the only two I'm missing right now. And I guess the Midnight Sun game and University of Hawaii would take care of that as soon as I make those plans.
Nice. So yeah, share with us some of your other highlights, some of your favorites, maybe, you know, a favorite minor league, a favorite college and so forth.
As far as college goes, I would have to say all the SEC schools got a rate up there really high. It's like going to your rich uncle's house. You know, the ballparks are so unique and class, and the Big 12, again, very nice ballparks, and the ACC. Maybe
you watch it. They're gonna take your Big 10 card away.
It's funny you say that. In 2021, it was the first year after COVID, and I made a trip in February, and I started out going to Wake Forest. And every state, every city, every county had different rules as far as opening up the stadium to who they were going to let in. And I get to Wake Forest, and they said, well, you have to be on the players' list, family members and whatnot. And I said, oh, She says, "Are you a scout?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." Wink, wink. And he says, "What league are you with?" And I says, "Well, I'm with the Great Lakes Summer Collegiate League." And that's the one I knew was closest to my house. They used to have a team about 10, 12 miles away. So I used that and I got in, not to get in free, but to just get in because I was already there. And I'll bet that same line about 40, 50 times that summer. And I started wearing my Chief Wahoo hat. And I also had a membership card from the Baseball Hall of Fame. They had a Chief Wahoo logo on there. So that was my scouts card. And whenever they would ask for it, I would pull that card out and they'd look at it and say, "Okay, here's your ticket." When it works, why not keep doing it, you know? And there were times where they gave me a ticket for free and many times where I paid for it. But I think the best one was in down in Miami in Florida. What is it? Alex Rodriguez Field, whatnot. And the guy had a clipboard, says, "What team you with?" He looked at my hat. He said, "Oh, Indians." I said, "Yes." So he puts a check mark next to his clipboard and he says, "Go over there and get your ticket." Well, the ticket I got said MLB scout on it. So that was a keeper. And, you know, again, I didn't do it to get in free. I just didn't want to go through the hassle of saying, "Well, we're sorry, but we can't let you in."
Yeah. After the University of Miami sees this podcast, you're going to probably get a letter and a bill from them now.
There was a time I was about 35 years old and I was at Zebulon in North Carolina, the Mudcats. And I didn't want to wait in line because there was a bunch of camp. So I walked to the other side of the stadium. There was a door that was open. So I walked in and all the interns, they're probably like 18, 19, 20. They saw me. I had a bag on me. They just let me walk in. Nobody said anything. They just said, "Oh, he probably works for the team." And that's when I realized I was an old guy. I was this old man walking in. Everybody thought I was with the team. So that gave me the idea. If I could do it here, I could do it elsewhere. So sometimes I get in. What Great Lakes team did you get in?
They were called the Galleon Graders.
Oh, yeah.
Galleon, Ohio, and they no longer have a team.
Yeah.
But I went so far as to ask a scout at a game. I noticed he had a big World Series ring, so I talked to him. I said, "Hey, let me ask you." I says, "When they let you in free at a college game, they don't charge the organization for that," because I didn't want to, you know, all bulletin being put out on me. So he says, no, they just do that as a courtesy because you're scouting their players. And I said, "Oh, good. Now I don't feel so bad."
Yeah, so. Then you try to get some free food and drink, and then they'll.
Well, I told my wife, I says, you know, they told me where the scouts sit, and I did not go there because I didn't want to be discovered. And I didn't really fit the typical scout because they were mostly younger. They wore khakis. They had clipboards, speed guns, stopwatches. Very old. And I was in shorts and a T-shirt. So, you know, I didn't really fit the bill.
Yeah.
You were like the guy in Trouble with the Curve. You were Clint Eastwood's character.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. I would fit that group of guys a lot more.
Well. Speak one more question about the Great Lakes League. Have you been to Salina, Ohio, to the Mariners games?
Have you had
Mariner sauce?
Have I had what now?
Mariner sauce. They're known for this crazy cocktail.
You know, I've not been very diligent about trying, you know, the ballpark food of the area. Like a lot of people love doing that, and you know, I've never really got right.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just saying, when I went to Grand Lakes, it was this nice little town along the lake, great ballpark, beer garden, nice beer specials, cheap food, cheap products. It really changed the way I felt about the Great Lakes League because I was like, yeah, that league is a joke. And them and Lima, the Cincinnati Steam, they really changed my mind on you know, how to enjoy a baseball stadium. It doesn't have to be 5,000 people. It could be a nice 500 seat park and highly enjoyable.
They're down to about seven teams now.
Yeah. Seven teams.
They've only got two Michigan teams and the five from Ohio. And it's, you know, kind of like the Pecos League. They just keep changing every year and getting new teams, adding, subtracting, and
it's weird because we had a team in Richmond, and they're taking a year off. The team in Muskegon is nice, but they're a little bit out of the way. Royal Oak joined the Northwoods League, so you know I hope they can pick up a few more teams because you want to see these leagues survive because you know whenever you can take a ballpark and transform it into some summer entertainment, I think that's a win-win for everybody. And like I said, I'm at the point where any ballpark is fine with me. Just, you know, make sure you make it worth my time out there. And I think a lot of those teams do that in the Great Lakes League.
Yeah. I think there's one in Michigan now. I can't remember but they've this year relocated to a D3 ballpark, which, you know, there's a lot of nice D3 parks out there. What state?
Michigan. Yeah. No, right. Especially Michigan. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, where are you located again, Joe?
I'm in Mansfield, Ohio, exactly between Cleveland and Columbus. Okay, so nice. Very good for travel.
Yeah.
No, I just got back from a trip, and I went to Colorado, Montana, Oregon, California, and I drove.
So, that's nice.
I'm retired, so why not? You know, see the country.
I was married. Those are the good old days.
Right.
So Progressive Field, does that count twice, once for the Indians and once for the Guardians?
Oh, of course not.
No, but I do count, obviously, Cleveland Municipal Stadium and Progressive Field is two different parks. And I've been to three in Pittsburgh and three in Cincinnati.
Wow. You've
been to Forbes?
Oh, yeah. Forbes and Crosby Field also.
So if you had omnipotent power and could bring one team/park back for one day only that you've seen that's gone, who would it be?
That I've seen that's gone. You know, I would have to say probably Cleveland Municipal and also Tiger Stadium. They were similar. And, you know, Tiger with that overhang in right field, the upper deck. And, it was just atmosphere.
I think we need to mark this down. First time ever somebody said something nice about Cleveland Municipal Stadium.
Yep.
Put it on the calendar.
Been there several times, and not the best, but, you know, when you're familiar with it and you're comfortable, it kind of becomes home.
It's home, right.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, I had a chance to go to Cleveland Stadium in 1993 from New Jersey, and I couldn't go, and I wish I was able to do that. 1999, I had a chance to go to Tiger Stadium, and I said, no, let me go back to college and party with my friends. Still kicking myself for that. So two ballparks I had a chance to go to, and I screwed up.
I'm the same way. I spent many Friday and Saturday nights partying with my friends.
Yep.
Where if I would have had this bug, I would have gone to, you know, Baltimore and, Candlestick and some of the ones I missed out on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all ballpark chasers have a few. We look back and we're like, oh, how stupid, you know.
What's your biggest biggest regret of which one that you missed that you wish you could have gone there once?
That's a very good question. I would think maybe the Astrodome would have to be there, only because of uniqueness, you know. Ebbets Field, age-wise, I didn't really have the chance to go there, but, you know, everybody talked about it and, says it was a great time. So if I could go back in time, I'd like to do that one.
Oh, yeah.
Are you one of these people who, like, you're talking about Ebbets Field, you can go check out, like, historical markers of where Ebbets Field once was. When you're on your travels, do things like that as well? Baseball adjacent activities?
Not really. I mean, I follow the people that do it on the ballpark chasers. I think it's cool, the old Ford Field wall. And I guess I was at the Mall of America where they've got the Harmon Killebrew seat, you know, on the wall there. But I kind of get a kick out of the people that even go to the grave sites and whatnot and all these cities of the old Hall of Famers and stuff. You know, I don't know. I don't really get too much of a kick out of seeing a grave marker, you know, with somebody's name on it. So everybody's,
Do you have any groups where, like, you've seen an entire league and that league is now gone?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, now I went to the there was a couple years back, thing, it was an independent league called the Expedition League. Take that back. Oh. It was college summer. And at one time it started with 8, then it grew to 10. And I had seen all of them. Then the next year they went down and they broke up. And I think they've only got 3 or 4 teams left. And yeah. I'm not even checked to see if
seven teams left to form the Independence Baseball League, which is still around.
Right.
And the Expedition League was left with 4 teams, and they wind up folding. A lot of drama. If you look up some of the information, it's a good soap opera. It's.
I don't know if it was because one guy owned all the teams. And, you know, sometimes if the guy's got money, that can be a good thing. But then it can be a drawback, too, if, you know, he's struggling and 3 or 4 different places.
Yeah.
But one nice thing about that league was when I went to Minot, North Dakota, it was my 400th ballpark, and they let me throw the first pitch. Wow. And as I'm walking up the field, the whole team from Minot shook my hand, you know, because they made an announcement that it was my 400th ballpark. And, you know, that touched me. It was, but that was a class move.
Now they're home to the Minot Hot Tots.
Yes. If they don't change the ballparks, they'll change their nickname in a hurry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great that they honored you like that. Did they get a standing ovation, I assume?
Yeah. It was, you know, I had done it at my 300th ballpark also in Pittsfield, Mass. And it was a couple of years before. And, you know, there I tried to throw a strike. And I did pretty well for 59 feet. And that time I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to lob it in. And, you know, I'm not impressing anybody. So that's what I did. And, you know, it's like, who cares, right? Yeah. It either catches it or it goes over the plate or it doesn't.
Exactly. You were just talking about Pittsfield, Mass, Joe. Have you heard of what's up with Wacona Park right now?
No.
But you know what? After I had been there, I didn't realize that Jim Boughton had wrote that book. And that was a very good read and interesting book.
Yeah, that ballpark, Wacona Park, it's one of the oldest wooden grandstands still left in the country. It's actually been condemned.
Oh, that's...
So they're trying to figure out how they can renovate it and restore it and keep it, bring it up to code and keep it going. But they've actually had to take a year off from the Futures League while I try to get the ballpark straightened out.
I don't know that.
Somebody needs to contact Rob Manfred and see if they can't, you know, do what they did there, Rick Wood. And it's, you know, just because it wasn't built in 1910 doesn't mean it's not still a gem, you know?
Yeah, no, I was there about 20-some years ago. I saw the Berkshire Black Bears managed by George Scott, former major leaguer.
That's who Jim Boughton was involved with, I remember. Trying to get that team
I read that book as well. Not a bad idea, but I think the team was only there for a couple years.
Yes.
And it's a shame because I go to a lot of ballparks and I visit these stadiums like Fort Worth Cats. Did you get down to LeGray Field at any time in your life?
No, that one I did not get to.
Yeah. Like that's been sitting vacant for a decade and now they're knocking it down and it's a shame that they build these ballparks and you know, Pittsfield has been around for almost 100 years, if not more. But some of these other ballparks, you know, 15 years, okay, done. Let's knock them down. Hmm. It breaks your heart. Camden, Newark.
What's amazing is when you hear that the community or a group has raised money to renovate the park and, you know, $2 million just doesn't go as far as it should, you know?
No, you're shocked.
It's just like a couple coats of paint and boom, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like Valley Field in Grand Rapids, there's a ballpark that's about 85 years old. The amount of money they had to put into that from funds in the state, you know, it was a long process. But, you know, that's working out there. How many other ballparks, you know, can use that right now as we speak?
Yeah. So, all right, Joe, I'm sorry to cut you off.
I think they're redoing the one in Michigan.
Hamtramck?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly where they're at with it.
No, it's been refurbished. Yeah, it's completely refurbished.
Done. Okay. Okay. But then there's no team that calls it home as far as the team to clean and those. It's used for multiple levels of ball, correct?
Yeah, it's used for amateur. There's not a fence around it. And I think one of the goals, there was talks about putting a Great Lakes League team in there, but.
Well, I think if I read right, there was a Shoreline summer league team that played one or two games there.
That could be the case too, yeah. And right. Then some of that money came from Jack White from the rock group, the White Stripes.
Okay.
Some money. So, you know, some of these funds are coming from unexpected people. You know,
well, I was going to hit the entertainment music industry and the ball players that maybe came from that area. where the money is.
Yeah. And then, you know, I was there when that place was boarded up and, you know, in squalid condition. It's beautiful now. You know, it's one of the original Negro League stadiums. And it's great that, you know, people can go there and get a little history and, you know, it has a story to tell still.
Well, now, have any of you been to Hinchliffe Stadium in Patterson?
I've snuck into there. I have not been there since the renovation.
I was just there about a month ago, Joe.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you read how much they put into there.
Yeah.
And it's like amazing, but it's kind of like, where did it all go? I mean, it's, you know, that's a lot of money. I mean, I guess that parking garage is included and, you know, the museum section was not open beyond center field, so that's another building. But it's like, I guess we don't know a building cost like we do in ticket prices. So
yeah.
Well, I like that. I love that they refurbished it because I snuck in there a few times.
Before or after, Mark?
This was before. Yeah. No, I haven't been
pictures of it before. Oh my God.
Yeah, but before it was, I'm surprised some derelict wasn't in there with a bottle or you know, a needle. You took your life in your hands when you went in there, but I like that. I don't know if that's a great place to call a ballpark for a professional team. I'm a little bit worried that it's
you've got the parking garage, which I guess is good, but you know, if you don't want that option, parking is limited. Really, the field design is okay. Plenty of seating. So, you know, that's not a problem. I talked to the mayor who, you know, was involved with raising that money. And I said, well, you know, you need to contact Major League Baseball, see if they wouldn't put a Field of Dreams game here or something. Just, you know, let everybody know about it and, you know, try to get revenue. So,
all right. I've got a question for you, Joe. Have you ever been sitting in a bleacher somewhere and all of a sudden thought to yourself, what the hell am I doing here? Or have you ever driving to some town way, way off the beaten path and thinking, what am I doing here with myself? Am I just on a fool's errand here? Have you ever had those kind of thoughts?
Yeah, sometimes we think about, you know, the money. A lot of times it's not the money, but the time involved in getting there. And then you get there and you go, well, this is not anything more than a city park. I could have stayed home and watched, you know. It's just, you know, you have no control over who plays in what league and where they play. And you just, you know, we follow the schedule.
I'm with you there. I am with you there.
A lot of times you look around and you go, well, this place has potential. And, you know, we'll paint here and some signs on the outfield fence, give this place a little color instead of just, you know, the brown dirt, the green grass, and the whatever color the seats are, bleachers, you know.
So, yeah, or if you're like my wife, sorry, Dave, you know, we've been to so many ballparks, she'll say, why don't they do this here? She's always got some kind of ideas of how to improve the atmosphere or the facilities.
I mean, it's easy to spend other people's money, right?
Absolutely.
That's some of my things, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Joe, what's the weirdest thing that you've ever seen at a ballpark or
weird? Well,
it could be like something in the game day promotions. It could be a feature of a stadium. Could be something a fan, whatever. Weirdest thing you saw at a ballpark.
Something that just came to the top of my mind was I was at a college game in Virginia, Longwood University, I believe it's called. And they actually had a robot, like the kind that you might use to mow your lawn or sweep your house. But it took the batter's box lines and also the logo on the field. And it was controlled by an iPad. And, you know, it falls into the category of you think you've seen everything, and they just keep coming up with something new. And I asked the guy about it, and he said, I think he said it was like $30,000 and, you know, money well spent. I'm not sure, but it was unique. But, wow, as far as promotions go, I don't know. I was involved in a promotion at in the Lumber Kings in Iowa. And, you know, do you want to play the air guitar? Well, my age, no. And they, well, how about cornhole? Well, I could do that. So I did it, and I got one in, and I won a prize. And they said, well, we got a hat and a T-shirt. And I said, well, I just assume to have a beer if you've got one. And they said, okay, we'll give you a big one. I said, even better. So that was my prize for, you know, getting in the hole for cornhole. So Clinton Lumber Kings it was.
That's like the best prize I've ever heard of.
everybody's got ball hats. So who needs another one of those? So, you know.
Paul does. He needs another hat.
You're the hat guy, Dave. All right, there you go. That's a good question. Joe, do you collect any kind of souvenirs or mementos from all these places you've been?
I've kind of, you know, obviously the baseballs has become a thing here within the last 4 or 5 years. But I liked it when they still printed tickets. I collected those. Sure, it shows you where you've been, what the date was, who they were playing, the name of the ballpark. Well, those are getting tough to get, but I, in my wondering mind, a lot of times they'll say, well, what's a good phone number we can send that ticket to? And I said, oh, I have a flip phone. Can you print it out for me? And most times they will. So, you know, I've used that. But I started collecting the koozies, the beer koozies for a while. Well, then you run into a couple places that don't have them, and that kind of, you know, puts a monkey wrench into that plan. So, you know, I know the major league parks, I was always collecting programs, and then you'd always, you know, try to get a souvenir cup, whether it was for soda or beer or whatever. And I kind of like those, the beer bats that they have. I've only got one, but they've even changed those where they put like almost like tape on the grips for the bat, you know. But I'm reading that how much people have to spend for those, you know, and obviously it's not cheap. So
you've got a good collection of game balls behind you.
Yes, I've you know, like I say, I've got again, the fellow from Michigan, Ryan Neitzel, helped me out and supplied me with a lot of the minor league balls, so the different you know, Pacific Coast and intermediate and leagues like that, Texas League. And I had a few, but he filled in holes for me. And now we kind of work as a tandem when we go to ballparks. And like the college D1s, we run into the conference balls, but also there's probably, as we can figure, maybe 15 to 20% have college logo balls. In other words, Indiana, Michigan, Iowa from the Big Ten, they have their school logo on there. And when you run into those, you know, it's nice to collect one of those. So we'll grab a couple and swap them. And so, you know, made a nice hobby to collect those. So
how many foul balls have you got?
That's a good question. You know, I've caught a few on the bounce on the fly, but that's another thing that's kind of become part of my routine, is positioning myself at a ballpark to where, you know, the foul balls will come, and then being able to a lot of times talk to an usher and go in and go out and see where they, you know, I've gotten home run balls and stuff. So that's always on my mind, if I need that ball, or, you know, I use it to trade. There's, you learn the tricks of the trade, you know, it's just experience. Let's say you're at an ACC ball game and you need an ACC ball. And, you know, you get one, a lot of times the players will run out and get them. Well, you just put one in your pocket from another conference and flip them the ball. They don't look at it. So, you know, then you got your ACC ball. It's just, and you're not giving them a ball out of the gutter that your dog chewed on. You're giving them another ball that you got at another conference. We did that at Eastern Michigan, and they had a nice green English-style E on their ball. And we flipped them an ACC ball, and a guy looked at it and says, "Hey, this is ACC." And I said, "Well, I thought you were in the MAC." And he just walked away and went back. You know?
See, that's what you got to do up here if you go to Intercounty, because they always have the announcement at Intercounty games. Baseball foul balls are the property of the Kitchener Panthers and must be returned to the concession stand.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Well, that's, you know, hey, a foul ball is a foul ball. You know, I've been to games where I gave them a ball from another conference and I got that same foul ball back. Well, they're going to get it back soon. You know?
Well,
you know, what are the chances of that happening? So they put it in play, and I put it back in play. So.
Up here, they usually trade the foul ball for a freezy because, you know, the kids will go run for them. Or so you can go and take it to the concession stand. They'll give you a freezy.
Yeah, that's nice. But I tell you, I was so embarrassed to be a Big Ten fan because I was at Purdue, and a little kid got a foul ball, and this supervisor kind of walked him over to the table. And they actually gave him a sticker. And I told the kid's dad, "You know what? If I want a sticker, I'll go vote or go to the dentist." I said, "I'm not going to give them a ball to get a sticker. I'm just going to say, no, I'd rather keep it." And a lot of times they'll give it back. But I never had the situation where they're going to remove you from the game if you refuse. You know, just give them some story. "Hey, I need this ball. I came all the way from Ohio. Can I keep it?" You know, so. They usually work with it.
Yeah, stickers are popular now with millennials. They like I have to make, you know, I think, you know, Stadium Journey, if they could make, release more stickers, you would be surprised how many people would want them to put them on their, you know, Chromebooks and whatnot.
What, have you been to a game where there's a couple ballpark chasers, I think, and who was the ball player they called the Stork? Played for the Mets?
George Theodore?
Theodore Harris or something like that. Well, there's like a sticker of his with number 11, and I've seen it on seats before at different parks. And I think they've kind of made a game out of it where they just take one along with them and put it on a box seat somewhere behind home plate. To, you know, it says the Stork on there or whatever, and, you know, see how many ballparks they can get that sticker in.
Okay, I have to look for that. I've never noticed that, but... it's kind of cool to know if I happen to bump into that. So there's a sticker of George Theodore who played many years ago with the Mets.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how that started or who's doing it. But I've seen a few of the chasers comment on that they, you know, put a sticker on a seat somewhere, you know. So
do you have any favorites outside of the U.S. of A?
No, in fact, I've been to a handful in Canada. You know, obviously, Olympic Stadium, Montreal, and then the Rogers Center. But, you know, as far as a few independent, but I'm not, you know, I kind of envy some of those guys that go to England and some of those games. And, you know, I guess I'd like to, but I'm not sure I want to, you know, for just one game, go into the expense of spending whatever it costs to, you know, to get there.
Yeah, it's amazing. Paul Caputo, I think, went to London to see the Mets and Phillies. And I don't know. It must be nice to just say, "Hey, I'm going to London to see a baseball game." I guess.
Well, I suppose if you look at it as a one-time thing, you know, like the ballpark chaser, Scott Freer, he plays the bugle at the Jackals, New Jersey Jackals.
And we know.
And he met with his wife, and I told him, you know, I'm envious, you know. And I said, "You went big time on me, you know." So
yeah. Well, flights from New York City are not. If you live in New York or Boston, I would assume the flights to London are not terrible. You could take mass transportation. You just spend an arm and a leg on a hotel and you're fine. Because I was just talking to a guy the other day. London is just one of the most expensive cities you can ever visit. And my grandfather said that, and he was there back in the 1930s. So things haven't changed there. So, you know, at the time the Mets were playing bad, I said, I can see the Mets play here in the States or Cincinnati or Chicago to lose. I don't need to go to London, but it's they wind up winning.
I started my major league journeys like in 1998, and I'm really thankful that I started it that soon because, you know, at that time it was still affordable. And now, yes, you know, a family to the major league game, and it's like what going on a week's vacation used to be. It's just
A major expense. Yeah, I got back from Milwaukee, and if you prepay, you can get, you know, maybe $15 parking, but I think it was between 25 and 40 on Sundays. Beers were between $12 and $14. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's expensive for one person to go to a game. You know, I remember getting a $6 ticket to the Vet or $7 game to Shea Stadium.
I think that's why I see so many guys, for example, they'll go with a buddy. You know, sometimes they'll go with their wife, but the kids stay at home. A lot of times you'll see the wife, they go with girlfriends, so they only have to pay for one ticket instead of, you know, family of four or six or however many's in the family. So
no, it's pricey. It's pricey. Some like Cincinnati to go to a Reds game is still pretty affordable. But yeah, a lot like, you know, Wrigley Field, Comiskey Park, even, you know, and there's, you know, and I hate when they price gouge you. I had a friend up here from Costa Rica, him and his wife wanted to go see the Cubs. We were going to buy tickets on SeatGeek or Ticketmaster. It was $50 plus $23 per ticket service fee.
Yeah, that's what pisses me off.
$23 for all for each ticket plus $2 for something else. We wind up going to a Chicago Dogs game. It was like $9 a ticket, $3 to park. They had a $2 beers. They had a blast. They had a blast up there in Rosemont, so it's pricing out customers. It's insane. I don't care if you're playing the Cardinals or the Yankees. You shouldn't be charging $23. I guess that's Ticketmaster, but
well, when you think about it, it's just a regular season game, and there's 162 of it. So what makes that game, you know, special?
Yeah,
only the fact that you're there. You know?
Yeah, someday if you're there on a Tuesday watching the Cubs versus the Tampa Bay Rays in the afternoon, you're going to pay what, $10 for a ticket. If it's the Cardinals on a Friday afternoon, yeah, you're going to be paying $50. Yeah, it's I hate it. I hate ticket prices. My attitude is I pay, you know, either if you're going to charge me a lot for the tickets, charge me less for the food, or vice versa.
There's so much profit on that. You know
what a terrible businessman you'd make.
I would, yes. That's why I don't want to. If I own a baseball team, it probably would be in the Great Lakes League. I wouldn't make any money, but my team would survive and I would be
you'd have fun
service to my community.
you know it would help, Mark.
What's that?
Stop going.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I know it's an impossible I know it's an impossible task, but you know, that's a lot of money.
And they have people stop going to many baseball teams, and those teams have folded and ceased operations.
Joe, have you ever kept track of all your travels of how much money has gone towards baseball stadiums?
No, I haven't, and I'm glad I haven't. I would probably have second thought because, you know, I'm not a high comfortability type person. You know, I'm not afraid to say that I stay at Motel 6. You know, if they have a bed and a shower, that's all I'm asking for. You know, cleanliness is nice, but it's not, you know, I don't give it the white glove treatment, but, have pretty good luck, you know, staying there. So I try to keep the prices down. I'll buy a general admission, standing room only, or whatever the cheapest is, because I like to observe and roam the stadium. I rarely sit. I just want to, you know, be on my feet after all that driving and, you know, experience it that way.
Do you have any desire to do Like, I don't remember talking about traveling and I think you're referring to some of the one-offs, like, you know, London or Australia or whatever, but do you have any desire to do like a big tour of, let's say, like Japan or Korea, do a whole whack of professional ballparks in one foul swoop?
Not at this point. You know, I suppose if the opportunity was there, or, you know, let's say if a team in Japan or entered the major league, so that would give me a reason to. But, you know, you talk about the logistics. My trips are very simple to plan. You know, you get on the internet and then a 3:30 game. Okay, I can make that one, and I might even be able to make the 7 o'clock game that's an hour or two away, you know. So, but over there, I hated the last time I went to Canada because everybody was speaking French and I just felt like such an outsider and a foreigner. And I went to a grocery store to pick up a few items, and the lady put down the bar across there, and of course it was in French, and I guess it said this lane is closed, and I thought she was just putting a separation between my groceries and the next guy. And I learned in a hurry, but she, since I only had a couple of items, she took one more person, you know. So
I assume this was in Montreal, correct?
No, it was actually the
Three Rivers.
Yep. Trois-Rivières
or Quebec City? Quebec.
Yes. I made a three ballpark trip on that one to finish up the three in the K&M that I hadn't been to. So, but yeah, it was, you know, it's just weird. I got along pretty well because they speak both English and French, but you know, when all you hear is French, it just makes you feel like a foreigner, and you are, I guess.
You are a foreigner.
I thought I spoke French until I went up there last summer, Joe, so I can sympathize with you.
The funny thing is, in Montreal, they'll speak French to you, and then you start speaking English, and it's like, okay, I know you know how to speak English, guys. So, but
again, actually, it's really easy. All you have to do is attempt to speak French, and then they'll start speaking English to you.
So kind of like when you start speaking Spanish somewhere. Oh,
they'll know.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. What terrible French you've got. Okay, I'll help you out here.
Toronto.
All right, Joe. So 775 ballparks. Do you have an ultimate goal? Are you looking to get to 1,000?
Are there?
Yeah. 1,000 is definitely a goal of mine right now. I don't know. I would say that's probably going to, you know, I'm approaching 70 in October. So I don't know how long this is going to last, but, you know, health is pretty good, but nothing's holding me back right now, other than maybe the 180,000 miles I got in my car. So I don't need to trade that one in and start over on that regard. Wow. But you're
good to go. That was going to be one of my questions. How many miles are on your car?
And it's only 6 years old. So it goes to show you.
See, I'm pushing 50. So I'm looking at my car. It's got about 86,000. My last car had 202,000. I was coming back from Wrigley Field with it. So, you know,
this is the first car I've ever put 100,000 miles on. So that was kind of a unique thing, you know, but I'm not sure I want to get to 300,000 on this thing.
As long as you maintain your oil changes and get them checked up, you'll be fine. My mother-in-law's car is at 217,000.
Wow. Well, I am using the high mileage oils.
Yeah.
So
you have to. You have to be diligent.
We had a truck that topped out at 293 for something, and then one day driving down the street, in the middle of July, I heard a thump.
Yep.
And I opened
the door. Just disintegrated?
I opened the door and all the smoke, like there was no smoke until I stopped, opened the door. It just started pouring in. And it was I was about to say radiator. It was the radiator and the water pump. And they were like, we would like a 15. And we were like, no, you can have that. It's over. So we almost made 300. Almost.
That's good.
Did you donate it to Cars for Kids, or what happened to it?
It was, I don't remember the actual donation. It was donated, yes. We had it up on the we had it in the parking lot for a week, so we both stared at it. Sad because it was my wife's first car, lasted that long, and that went back and forth with her to Virginia Tech when she went to school and back, and countless of hockey arenas, and of course I killed it. I didn't really. It was just driving up a hill, and it was like
you happened to me in the driver's seat. What was your driving. First ballpark, Joe? Sorry, Dave.
I'm Dan.
Dan.
Say that again now.
What year was your first? I was going to ask you early. What year was your first baseball stadium and where was it? Was it Cleveland Municipal?
My recollection doesn't remember Cleveland being the first one. It's actually Forbes Field, and I think that was about 1960 or 61.
Nice.
So I have recollection of my dad taking me to Municipal Stadium, but I still kind of regret the fact that my brother got to go see Mickey Mantle play, and I was a year younger, and I had to stay behind. So I think that would have been my first one, and that was probably 1958 or so. You know, I was too young, didn't get to go. I really Forbes Field is my first, cause like a lot of times when you're young, you don't remember all the details and take in everything. That's why when I started doing the major league parks with my son, he was about 10 years old, 12 years old, really, when we started, which is a good age because they pick up things, you know, they remember things. And I think sometimes when kids are 4, 5, and 6, they just, you know, they remember being at a game, but they don't remember anything about it. Unless you take a lot of pictures and the parents keep reminding them, hey, remember that time we went and this happened and that happened and, you know.
Are there, what ballparks, Joe, are on your to-do list as you approach 1,000?
Obviously, I want to try to finish D1. Believe it or not, I have to renew my passport card because I haven't been to Winnipeg yet in the Indy League. And then there's the Inter-County League in Canada that I want to get to because I think, you know, you could probably do, is there 6 teams in that league, 8 maybe? You could probably do them all in one trip. And, other than that, I keep hearing about new ones. Obviously, the new ballpark in Hagerstown I want to get to. The Coastal Plain League added a team in Greenville, North Carolina. They're using an older ballpark that I haven't been to yet. So I keep jotting them down as I hear them so I don't have to trust my memory, you know?
The good thing about a quest like this is the goal line is always moving. We'll never get to the end of it. So that could be either a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, even like you, Paul, I mean, do you ever want to quit? Do you mean, there's no reason unless you want to start making, basket weaving or take up golf, completely change gears, you know, you don't want the journey to end, so.
No, as long as my health and my wallet allows, I'll be chasing ballparks too, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
So one last question, Joe, before we let you go, because we're coming up on an hour here. What advice would you give to someone who is just starting out chasing ballparks? What's some tips of the trade that you found over the years to make the chase a little easier?
Well, I think you learn as you go. You know, if you have a plan, like I think everybody's ultimate goal is to see all the major league ballparks. Now, you know, you hear so many people say, where should I sit? What should I eat? What should I do? You know, I would say, if you can work in other, like going to Alcatraz when you go to San Francisco, seeing the arch, obviously, in St. Louis, take a tour of the Budweiser factory, you know, different things like that along the way, which might require that you take another day and spend another day in the city. That would be a good thing. But if your ultimate goal is just to see as many parks as you can, then work in the minor leagues with the majors, work in the independents with those, spring training and all, you know, just have a plan. And, like as we go, we want to do a certain area. We kind of pick out that 11 o'clock game and then work the schedule from there you know, let's say that 11 o'clock game's on a Wednesday, and then we find we can make a 6 or 7 o'clock game later that day, and then work back to a game on a Tuesday, and you know, try to maximize your time in a certain area.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you. That my advice to anyone is you know, this has been for me at least such a great way to see the country, so many things all in all these different places. You know, don't shy away from taking a little time away from the ballpark to check out the different places you're going to.
Right, and pay attention to your road signs. Like I was, you know, near Keystone, South Dakota, and I had no idea that's where Mount Rushmore was. But when you see it's 25 miles away, hey, I'm there, you know, and I'm glad I went there. And then I can't believe that Crazy Horse is so close to that, and it was 2 years later that I actually went to Crazy Horse. And then you think, oh, well, it's got to be bigger, and they're still working on it, and no U.S. funds, you know, they're using their own funds to build it. And it's interesting, you know.
They've been working on that for about, 75 years, correct?
I don't think that's going to be done for our grandchildren, I don't think. Oh, Joe, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your travels with us. It's been a great time talking to you and swapping stories. I didn't want to interrupt you. If any of our listeners want to follow your travels, do you do anything online where they could kind of check out where you're going or where you've been?
I am a member of Ballpark Chasers, and I do post where I take, you know, half a dozen pictures or so, try to get some unique pictures of where I'm going, and just, you know, not necessarily try to give it the whole three paragraphs, but where it is, what city, what league, and then, you know, I always like to take a picture of a foul ball if I get one, just so they know, you know, what kind of ball they're using and what it has on there in case they might want to start a collection of their own.
All right. Well, Joe, it's been a pleasure. And thanks again for coming on and joining us tonight.
Thank you again, guys, and good luck with all of you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That's amazing. That number staggers me, 775 ballparks.
He had about a 20-year head start from me.
Not on me. I'm sorry to tell you.
There's a retirement goal.
Retirement goal for me, I guess.
Checking out, like, you know, your nephew's T-ball game. Like, I don't even know how there's 900 ballparks to go to.
Well, you figure 100 in, like he said, it used to be 160 minor league parks. Independent parks, you can add another 100. 300 D1, 300 D2. There's got to be like 2 or 3,000 summer college league game parks at this point. I'm sure it can add up pretty quickly.
Community college, I never consider that, but I've been to a couple.
Chase your rules, right?
Yeah.
All right. So thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Dan, where can our listeners follow your online adventures?
DanLaw 83.
And I think
make that hard. That's it.
Yeah. I think for the rest of us, I think we all have trips coming up. So, Mark, where are you heading on the road this next couple of weeks, and where can our listeners follow you?
Well, I'm heading to Costa Rica tomorrow via Houston. So I will be watching a soccer game, the Super Classic, Saprissa versus Heredia. That's a soccer match. And then there is a baseball stadium in Costa Rica. I don't know who plays there. I don't think they have a team, but I'm going to check it out, see what the heck's going on there. So that's going to be me for the next 10 days. So it's not going to be a lot of baseball. It's just going to be me with spending time with my dad and doing some other things. So
nice. Well, enjoy your trip, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
And Dave, where can our listeners follow you, and where are you heading? I know part of it.
Twitter and Instagram at ProFan9, and also YouTube. You can check out my appearance on the Locked On Jets podcast, which was kind of fun.
That was excellent. I listened to it. It was very good.
Thank you. Talked about the away schedule for the Jets, and got a lot of help and talked about Tottenham after talking to Richard, and I sounded like I knew what I was talking about, but I really had no clue. So
No, I could tell because you did a lot of ums and, you know.
I always do ums. But yeah, and it is convention time. So I'm heading out for convention on Wednesday. I'm stopping to see the Reading Fightin' Phils.
Nice. One of my favorites.
Then our convention group. So York Revolution, Aberdeen Ironbirds, Washington Mystics. I'm taking the extra trip to see the Baltimore Orioles, who are disgustingly good this year. Holy crow.
They're in second place, though.
And Bethesda Big Train. And then after that, I'm hoping to get some Welland Jackfish and round out some junior lacrosse as playoffs are coming in. So Brampton Excelsiors. So that's a pretty busy time. So check it all out at Profan 9.
All right, and as for me, Twitter and Instagram, at PuckManRI, and I, too, will be heading down to the D.C. area for the Stadium Journey get-together. So, like Dave said, I won't be doing York. I can't leave till the next day, so I'll be joining the crew in Aberdeen, and then the Mystics and the Orioles and the Bethesda Big Train. And from there, we're heading off to parts unknown, well, at least unknown for us. We're going to do our annual ballpark trip. Monday will be in Asheville, North Carolina.
Nice.
Tuesday will be in Memphis. Wednesday we will be in Little Rock, then Nashville, then Charleston, West Virginia to see the Dirty Birds, then the new ballpark in Hagerstown. And the original plan was to see the Yankees and Red Sox to cap off the trip, but Major League Baseball did us dirty and moved that game to 7:30 at night. So we're going to play it by ear for the last day. Right now it looks like the Connecticut Sun.
At least they didn't move it to 11:30 in the morning.
That would have been okay.
Yeah.
It is too early for baseball.
How about the Jersey Shore Blue Claws? Are they playing?
No, but that's kind of the wrong direction because we both have to work on Monday, so we gotta be back at a reasonable hour on Sunday. That's why the Yankees Red Sox games wouldn't work. We wouldn't get back till 2 a.m. if we stayed for the night game. Because New York's a good 3 hours away from us. And the trip's kind of got a nice highlight because Pam will be hitting her 200th ballpark on this trip. Cool. So we're talking about numbers. She's got a milestone coming up. And like I said, at PuckManRI. Remember, you can find all of our stadium reviews, news items, and other feature stories on the website, stadiumjourney.com. Connect with us on all our social media channels at Stadium Journey. You can find audio versions of the Stadium Journey podcast by searching HIAC Talk Radio Network wherever you look for your favorite podcasts. And if you prefer video simulcasts of our podcast, just go to our YouTube page. And our live streams, if you want to be part of our live studio audience, Dan Law's media, vast media empire. We record every other Monday night at 7. Go to Dan Law 83 and you can find the links. We'll be back in 2 weeks. That'll be July 8th, if I'm reading the calendar correctly. We're going to recap all our trips. So hopefully Mark will have some Costa Rican adventures, and Dave and I will be crisscrossing the continent. So as always, we want to thank Joe again for joining us tonight, and thank everyone else for your support. For Dan, Mark, and Dave, this is Paul wishing you all safe journeys and close games.